All right, this is, of course, a very serious topic. Purposely, there are no blanks to fill in because we want to be very clear about what our policy here is. No nice, cute little artwork or illustrations. Going to violate some of the laws of being enthusiastic and all of that. There's really nothing to be enthusiastic about this, but very, very important. It's one of the primary drivers of why we're here today. Child abuse prevention policies and procedures. They are found in our staff handbook, but is just as applicable as to our staff as it is to our volunteers. It's applicable to anyone who serves it in any area of the church or is in charge or a leader in any area of the church. So we're going to be going through this section here, and really our purpose, and you'll notice that first of all, is to provide a caring, safe, and secure environment for our children in every area of ministry, every area of their life as they go on from in the nursery all the way up through to being a teen, young adult. You know, in here, our goal is to make this a very safe, caring, secure environment. And again, the souls of children are at stake here. This ministry here is so important because it's God's work, and I said that before. And the standard here is higher than what you would expect from in the public sector because it is God's work. It's important that this is a very, very safe environment that we have for our children. All right, our biblical foundation here, and if you turn, if you would, in your Bibles to the book of Mark chapter 10. And, you know, we seek to express love to our children, and we seek to make this an environment where it's very friendly, but of course within parameters. And look at the Word of God here in Mark chapter 10. Oops, I'm in the wrong book. In verse number 13, the Word of God says this. It says, "And they brought young children to him that he should touch them. And his disciples rebuked those that brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was much displeased and said unto them, Suffer the little children to come unto me and forbid them not. For of such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein." And I want you to notice that it says they brought him to Jesus to touch them. Let me ask you this question. Is it wrong or is it illegal to touch a child? No, it's not. It's wrong to touch them inappropriately. And it should be very, very clear to us what the difference is. And we're going to be covering some terms and some things about our prevention policy here. And know this, that no organization and or church can be completely protected 100% from something happening in the church. You can take all the safeguards that you could possibly imagine. You could do background checks, interviews, go over your policy every week if you wanted to, and you still could possibly have something happen. But here's the thing, is that we are going to take every avenue possible to make sure that nothing does. And again, this applies to both our volunteer and our compensated workers of Capital Baptist Church. We will not, and you'll notice on the second page of here under child abuse prevention policy, we will not tolerate child abuse or neglect. Your cooperation and the commitment is not only reflects your concern about the children's safety in this society, but also your willingness to take steps towards halting child abuse and its detrimental effects. I want you to notice some definitions here, some things that probably everybody knows, but an adult, according to law, is any person who is 18 years of older, and a child or of youth is a person who is under the age of 18. You notice the first term here, child abuse, letter C there. Some things in Delaware actually have changed concerning what is considered child abuse. And laws have been rewritten a little bit. And bear with me, I'm going to just read some of these things because I want us to be exact. You're going to be signing something later that says that you read this and understand it. So it's going to be a little dry. But a child abuse is an act committed by a parent, caregiver, or person in a position of trust, even though he or she may not care for the child on a daily basis, which is not accidental and which harms or threatens to harm a child's physical or mental health or welfare. The following definitions and explanations apply to determining whether abuse of a child has occurred. Notice physical abuse or pain is defined as a physical injury, threat of injury, or creation of a real and significant danger of substantial risk or death, disfigurement, or impairment of bodily function, such injury or threat of injury, regardless of intent, is inflicted or allowed to be inflicted by non-accidental means. And again, there is a difference between touching a child and touching them wrongly. Okay, I can come up to a child and I can say, you know, hey, Dave, I'm really glad you're here today. Thanks for coming. There's nothing wrong with that. Dave's misbehaving, and I start squeezing his shoulder. Dave, you know, you can't do that. The law has now defined physical injury to include pain. So, therefore, if you're causing pain to a child, guess what? You could be considered a child abuser. We should not be touching children in that way, in a way that is inappropriate or that causes pain to a child, or certainly physical injury or threatening physical injury. None of that. Physical neglect, number two, the failure to provide food, clothing, shelter, and I want you to underline this, supervision for a child is if the child's health or safety is endangered. And that's where a lot of us come into play here. We're not necessarily providing food, clothing, shelter, that type of thing, but we are providing supervision of children. So therefore, it can be a child neglect type thing if we are not properly supervising them. Also, another word that I underlined here down in this, it says physical neglect may include multiple occurrences or a one-time critical severe event that results in a threat to health or safety, such as a toddler left alone. Other types of neglect include abandonment, inadequate supervision, notice that again, and abandonment, inadequate clothing, inadequate shelter, inadequate personal hygiene, inadequate food, and malnutrition. And we're going to be getting into some, this is one of the reasons why we have at least a two-person adult rule, that two people should be teachers, a teacher and a helper should be in every classroom, because there shouldn't be a time where you're leaving your children alone or sending a child away on their own. Is to avoid those type of circumstances. Sexual abuse is abuse that consists of sexual contact or interaction with a child, including physical contact and non-physical contact, which it could be a number of things. The non-physical contact, meaning inappropriate things that you say, inappropriate things that you show them. There's a number of inappropriate things that you could do that could constitute sexual abuse. Medical neglect, refuses or failure of a caregiver to obtain or follow through with a complete regimen of medical, mental, or dental care for a condition which is untreated could result in illness or developmental delays. I just want to say under that, if a child brings something to your attention, some type of a medical need, it wouldn't be acceptable to just say, well, you'll be okay for the next 20 minutes. You know, you have to address it. Call the parent, get a hold of one of the staff here, or a deacon, somebody, so that we can get a hold of somebody. Let the parent make that decision. It's not for us to make a decision that child doesn't need medical care. You know, if they fall down on the playground or whatever, and they're going, I think my arm's broken. You'll be all right. You know, don't do that. You let the parent make that decision. Fair to thrive, number five there, is a syndrome of infancy or early childhood that is characterized by growth failure, signs of severe malnutrition, and variable degrees of developmental retardation. Again, that's not probably something that's going to pertain to us, but it's certainly something that as teachers we should be on the lookout for, that maybe it's occurring in their home. It's as a worker here, again, whether voluntary or staff, we have a responsibility. When they come here, if we see something obvious that looks like it's going on at home, that they're not getting the proper food, the proper care, the proper clothing, that type of thing, that it could be a situation where we need to notify somebody. So look for those type of things. Mental abuse, neglect, a pattern or acts of omission by the caregiver that results in harm to a child's psychological or emotional health or development. Educational neglect, the child's care director or caretaker is directly responsible for the fare of the child to attend school. And again, we may not see that, but again, when you're visiting your children and getting involved in their lives, you may come across these things. And bizarre discipline. Certainly we should not be doing anything bizarre or discipline, but again, as a teacher, we should be looking for things that, you know, if a child says something that's really out of the ordinary, there's a good chance that it might have happened. So be on the lookout for those kind of things. And it just defines here what a compensated worker and a voluntary worker are. I think we know those things. What a caregiver is, any compensated or voluntary work, sixth grade and older. A mandated reporter, letter G, is any person with a responsibility for the care of children is a mandated reporter. Let me ask you, as a Sunday school teacher, are you a mandated reporter? Yes, you are. It's not just pastor. You know, each of us are. Now, if you bring it up to one of our attention, you know, we could take on that responsibility, but you are a mandated reporter if you see some type of neglect that's going on. And there's numbers here at the bottom for Division of Family Services, and I also have a couple numbers at the end here, too, for reporting purposes. Corporal punishment is any punishment applied to the body, including but not limited to slapping, spanking, pinching, pulling, or squeezing. Again, we are not administering corporal punishment here. That would be the role of a parent and not of a teacher or somebody here. As I read earlier from the Christian Law Association, you know, we can, if a child is in a position where they're flinging their arms and, you know, could be a harm to somebody else or themselves, we can lawfully, within reason, restrain them until authorities or parents get there, but we are not to be administering any kind of a corporal punishment. All right, reducing the risk of child abuse. We have some things here that are in place in order to try to reduce the risk of child abuse here at our church. One is the six-month rule. Essentially, a person is required to be a church member here for at least a period of 6 months before they would be considered to be eligible for an area of ministry. And there are some exceptions to those things, and they're listed here. If they've served in a ministry somewhere else, you know, let's say that they came from another like faith church and they were very active in ministry there and they came here, certainly they could get involved right away. We would just contact that church and just make sure that you know, everything was okay over there. Provide a copy of their volunteer application form on file at their former ministry, and can provide a references from a staff person with whom they worked at that ministry. But in general rule, it's 6 months before somebody can be involved in ministry. Staff screening, and you're going to be getting a couple things here in a little bit that I'm going to ask you to sign. But we've established some procedures to screen those that are either A, on staff, or B, as a volunteer, that are going to be done before they start helping out. All volunteer and compensated workers must complete a standard application and disclosure form. You're going to be getting that in just a minute. And I know that most of us, if not all of us, have probably already filled one out, but we're going to get another form, just a new one to have on file, and we're going to do that every 2 years. B, the staff person responsible in the area of ministry will conduct an interview. More than likely, that interview will be conducted either by pastor or one of the leaders of the church. C, all persons who work with children or students must attend orientation training activities appropriate to the level of the volunteer or compensated worker involvement. This is so important, and I know that we said that we were this was a requirement to be here today, and it is a requirement, and it's a requirement to attend the workers' meeting that happens, you know, once a month. It's not an optional thing; it's necessary. There's just some important things sometimes the pastor has to give to us that we need to know to get ready for things. It's a mandatory thing. And then lastly, applicants must sign written acknowledgement stating they have received and reviewed a copy of the Child Abuse Prevention Policies and Procedures Manual. And I'm going to have a copy of that given to you too. All right, number two here. No adult individual, whether serving as a volunteer or a compensated worker, who has been convicted of a crime against a child or a violent crime against another adult, will provide services in any ministry, sponsored activity, or program for children or youth. We're a hard, fast rule here. All volunteer and compensated workers are subject to background checks. We don't necessarily do them, but subject to one. And you're going to be signing the form for that here in just a little while. Applications and the results of any screening will be kept confidential by authorized ministry staff, of course. The two adult rule, I made reference to that. There should be two adults assigned in every classroom when possible. Nursery, Sunday school classes, junior church class, youth meetings, every effort will be made to have two workers in that class. We need to pray for laborers. You know, it's important for us to have the amount of laborers needed so we can put in all of these ministries. I know it's, and you're here because you agree with me on this, but you know, it's so nice sometimes just to come in and just sit. It is, but God's work needs to be done. And every single one of us should be involved, because it's just God's will for us to be involved. All right, classroom discipline. And I talked earlier. Yes, sir. Yes, they can be husband and wife. Yes. Classroom discipline, and I referred to this earlier, it should be progressive. You know, you don't start out, you know, unloading the truck on them. It should start out with some simple things and progressively go up here. All teachers and workers will use the following discipline measures. If a child is behaving inappropriately, the teacher or worker will tell the child specifically what he or she is doing and that is not acceptable, and state that the expected behavior, what the expected behavior is. That's the first thing. And that can be done in a number of ways. It can be done, we talked about through eye contact, and we talked about just changing our position in our room, but it must be told to them. If those things fail, it must be told. That's the first level of progressive discipline, and it may clear. It could be that the child doesn't even know what you really expect. Notice the second thing here. It says if they're still not complying, number two, they should be guided to another activity. Have them do something else. If they're not paying attention here, you know, have them do something else. Number three, if it still continues, a child may be placed at a table to work alone away from the other students. You know, if that's what's necessary to keep them from being distracting to everybody else, have them sit somewhere else. And let me be 100% clear on here. That doesn't mean go put them in the janitor closet, you know, with the lights off. I'm talking about in another supervised location, maybe in the classroom, or if it can't be in the classroom, you know, get a hold of somebody to put them somebody else is located. But we laugh, but it's been done before. go sit over here, you know, away from everybody, and then, you know, you walk in and they're like, "What are you doing sitting here?" You know, they need to be supervised. Taken to the Sunday school superintendent. Of course, that's Sam. Or you can take them to their bus captain. But Sam needs to be made aware, if you would. I know a lot of times Sam is sitting up here on the platform. We have designated, because I'm usually back here in the back doing the ushering, come get me, and I can run interference, and I will tell Sam about it later. Because I know a lot of times things happen during the junior church hour. And notice here it says no corporal discipline or verbal abuse. For example, ridicule are to be used at any time. If isolating the child within the classroom or removal of the child from the room becomes necessary, the situation will be discussed with the children's parents or guardian as soon as possible. All right. Letter E here, the open classroom. You should not have, I think we've done a fairly good job of making sure that we have windows in most of our classrooms, I think. If you don't have a window in your classroom door, make sure you leave the door open. There's no reason why you should be behind a closed door and out of view from everybody. There's nothing that we're hiding. I know that we didn't do it for the reason of hiding. We would do it to eliminate distractions. But the bottom line is that we need to make sure that we have an open classroom. And with that said, I know Mr. Horn goes around and he does attendance and so forth. Mr. Horn has been kind of designated as kind of Sam's teaching. You know, I'm teaching. You know, we just can't be checking classrooms at the same time while we're teaching. So Mr. Horn has been designated as he's going around to just trying to make sure that all the classrooms are in order and everything is going as they're supposed to be. If he comes in and looks around, it's not because he's spying on you. It's just because it's part of his job. All right. Driving policies, and I won't spend a whole lot of time with that, but there's some criteria that we have if you're going to be a driver. And I think Brother Cordry, you're still kind of taking care of that, aren't you, as far as like collecting, if somebody's a driver, like collecting like driver's license and all that stuff. It's got to go through the pastor, but sure. But you have there's a list of things that you have to have here in order to be a driver, all right? Notice the letter G here, gifts. You should not be singling a child out and be giving them like special gifts. And I think we all understand this here. You know, how that could be perceived. You know, you might want to do something nice for a child, but at the same time, somebody might look at it. And all it takes is somebody to question your motives. And you don't want that to happen. So make sure you're not singling a child out like that. Overnight trips, that would have to go directly through the pastor. Really, we don't have overnight trips. You know, other than teen camp, the retreat, You know, those are our overnight trips that we have here at the church. Age-specific guidelines for working with children. And some of this will start out as a lengthy list, and then it will actually get a little smaller. With a nursery, it should have two adult female caregivers. They must be present in the nursery regardless of how few the children are in attendance. I know that you know, it might be a Wednesday night and you might just have one child in there. Oh, just go ahead and enjoy the service. No. We need two adults to be, or two people to be in there. The window of the nursery, and I think it's fine. There are no curtains there or anything to even consider closing it. But that's to be remain clear at all time. And I don't know about you, and me as a parent, I don't really like where the baby changing station is, me personally. But it's a necessity. You know, unfortunately, we live in an age where we have to be somewhere where it's in view so that we know that nobody is doing any kind of wrongdoing. The ministry and nursery workers who change diapers must adhere to the following policy. Always we either wear gloves or always use, you know, a wipe or something. You should never be touching a child, you know, with your bare hand. Children will be released to parents at the nursery counter. I know this is kind of a little thing that the nursery workers try to do, you know, keeping parents on the other side of the counter. It's so easy to want to, like, come in and get their bags and all of that stuff. No, I know it's easy to get comfortable here, but stay on the other side of the counter. Try to be, it's not just for you, it's just as an example for everybody, the visitors that are coming behind you and everybody else. This is how we do it. We stay behind the counter, we sign out, we get our stuff, we get our child, you know, without the walking in. Because, you know, when somebody walks into that area, it becomes now a liability because, you know, sometimes, you know, people that are visitors, you know, we don't know their background. So it's important that everybody stays outside of the gated area. Only assigned workers are allowed to stay in the nursery to be in the nursery area during sessions. Positive approach to discipline will be practiced. Clear, consistent, age-appropriate limits will be established to help the children function appropriately. And again, corporal punishment is not allowed. All right, preschool, ministry, toddlers through kindergarten. Again, two caregivers. I'm not going to read it all because we already looked at it. Again, the window's open. Children will be encouraged to take care of their own bathroom needs if they can. And I know sometimes, you know, it's a difficult situation, you know, when kids are having problems with belt buckles and zippers and all of that. If you can, you know, have another adult there with you when you're helping them there with those type of things, it's just going to protect you. Release the children at the door of the classroom. They shouldn't merely have, the parents shouldn't be coming in and, you know, around the other children and all of that. When children are taken out of the classroom, the teachers are to take count of the children, make sure that they're all present and all accounted for. Only assigned workers are allowed to stay in the preschool room or to be in the preschool area during sessions. Now, we did make I know Pastor and I, we've talked before, that if, let's say you have a visitor come and they are maybe apprehensive of leaving their children, it's okay if we designate 5 minutes at the beginning of the class, 5 minutes to just to make sure that the classroom is okay and make sure that it's going to be an all right environment for their children and all that, but then they need to go ahead and go. If they're not willing to do that, then they need to go with their child, you know, unfortunate. But they just cannot stay in there during the classroom time because they haven't signed all these agreements and all of that, and it opens up for liability. Again, use a positive approach to discipline. And number eight, the pastor or one delegated to do so by him must approve any children's activities that are held off-site. And those should be very, very limited, really. And just go through the pastor before you do something like that. All right, children's ministries, first through sixth grade, many of the same rules. Again, two caregivers, windows open, encourage children to take care of their own bathroom needs, you know, all of that. You know, make sure that you are using progressive discipline, as we've already discussed. And so really, it's kind of the same type rules. And then 7th grade through age 17, these are the teenagers. Again, the same type of rules apply. Notice number two, organized events on or off the ministry property will be staffed with a minimum of one adult per 10 students. That's something that's a little bit different, but I think we do a good job of that here with our teens. So I think everything else is pretty much the same. Notice number six, it is recognized that certain counseling and ministerial situations may preclude the presence of two adults. You know, maybe you're talking to them about salvation or whatever. Make sure that you're keeping the doors open is basically the gist of that one. Make sure that you're not in a hidden place. All right, number seven here, reporting child abuse. If Capital Baptist Church receives an allegation of child abuse, it will respond with the utmost concern to the victim, the parents, and other parties making such an allegation. It's important that we report anything that becomes what is known as reasonable suspicion. Look down here, it says, what is reasonable suspicion? Reasonable suspicion means that there is credible evidence or a discrepant or inconsistent history in explaining the child's suspected abuse. Here's what reasonable suspicion is in the police realm. If there could be something that is mere suspicion, that would be the least amount, and then there's reasonable suspicion. It's not what we call probable cause, and it sure isn't proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Let me give you this example. I'll use a speeder. You might say, wow, there's a red fancy sports car. Does that mean that it's speeding? No. Does it mean that it has a potential for speed? Yes, possibly. Reasonable suspicion would be like, well, they look like they're passing a bunch of people. You know, looks pretty reasonable that they're speeding. Probable cause was, okay, I've got them on my radar. You know, they're going 56 and a 55. They're speeding. And then proof beyond reasonable doubt would be, you know, that, you know, we can prove it in a court of law that they were speeding. And it's the same way with this child abuse policy. Mere suspicion would be maybe, you know, for neglect, would maybe like, oh, that kid, he comes from a bad neighborhood. Certainly he must be abused. It would raise to the level of reasonable suspicion if you started seeing bruises. Because not all, of course, you know, kids are kids. Not all bruises are from, you know, from some type of wrongful activity. You know, they play and they have fun and they fall and they get hurt. But to be reasonable suspicion is, let's say the child has some type of injury and they say something about something, they got in big trouble at home. Now you're at reasonable suspicion. And you're at a point where we're in a mandatory reporting scenario. All right, so is everybody kind of clear on that? Okay. And as a person who is a leader or a teacher, it's important for us not to be put in that category. You know, we should stop way before, we shouldn't even have mere suspicion. That's why this policy is in place, to keep doors open, act appropriate towards children with appropriate conversations, with not singling anybody out or preferring one child over another, or singling out conversations with a child, any of that. We should be above reproach, and that's the intent of this policy here. Notice this quickly about how we are to report, and then we'll be done. Treat each allegation of a child abuse seriously. Attempt to assure the safety and protection of the persons who have been harmed. Pray for the ministry. It's important. Pray for the ministry and all persons affected by the allegation. And that would include the person who you think is the culprit, on down to the victim, to this church and its leaders. Immediately begin documenting all procedures observed in handling the allegation. That's important because, you know, if it did come to a court scenario, a lot of times if it's not written down, it didn't happen. So make sure that you document things. Immediately notify the Sunday school superintendent and the pastor. Pastor will initiate internal investigation of the allegation within 24 hours notice. Immediately notify the appropriate state office of the allegation, and I'm going to give you some numbers here at the end. And immediately notify the parents if it is not known that they have previous knowledge of the allegation. That's important. Make sure that they are aware. And immediately notify the ministry's insurance company. That would be something that we would do here. Letter I, if the accused has assigned duties within the life of the ministry, that person must be temporarily relieved of his duties until the investigation is concluded. That's not to mean that they're guilty, but it means that we have to take them out of the scenario until it's resolved. The pastor should extend whatever care and resources necessary, and I believe we've done that in the past and we'll continue to do that. It is appropriate to show care and comfort for the alleged victim. This should be the pastoral objective from the moment the allegation is received or otherwise made known. Observe confidentiality for both the alleged victim and the accused until advised by the contrary by the pastor. Do not confront the accused until the safety of the child or the student is secured. And you know, you find yourself in a situation. You know, if you think something has happened and a parent, with the child and his parent, and the parent comes to pick up the child, you know, that's not the top time to confront the parent and get involved in an argument. You've got all these other children here. You've got to do it in the right timing. Letter N, do not prejudice the situation, but take the allegation seriously and reach out to the alleged victims and his or her family. And letter O, treat the accused with dignity and support. If the accused is a caregiver, that person should be relieved temporarily of his or her duties until the investigation is completed. And lastly, if the media or other parties contact the ministry, refer them to the pastor. You know, we don't make statements to the media. It could be something that's inaccurate or not stated correctly, and it causes so much more problems. Here's a couple numbers. The Child Abuse Help Hotline, 1-800-4-A-CHILD, and the State Child Abuse Hotline, 1-800-292-9582. Those are the numbers. But again, you know, contact the pastor or one of the leaders here, and we'll take care of that notification.